You're listening to Around Comics, episode 149.
Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic book roundtable. I'm Christopher Niesman.
I'm Brian Salazar.
And I'm Scotty Young, eating delicious pie brought to us by Michael Norton, and it's lemon pie.
I'm Mustache Jones.
Who the fuck is Mustache Jones?
Fuck you, tell fuck him. You.
Oh, sorry, Mustache.
Yeah, I've said that three times now, and still gets a laugh every time. How's that for re-listenability?
Well, welcome to our Club of the Month Club episode.
Just call it the club.
It's a club.
I'm our club. Tom, I'm
edutainment.
I'm
you guys want edutainment?
The Around
Center?
Comics Edutainment Center.
It's kind of long, don't you think? That's kind of a long name.
Like it's longer than Club of the Month.
No,
Club.
I'm not saying I want Club of the Month Club. I'm just saying it was a long
EC Edutainment Center. For people in the know, they'll know what it is.
ACEC?
The ACEC. That's gay.
ACDC.
I like how Chris moved it from like, that's not a good name, to that name actually sucks cock.
ACDC. We'll call it Ace Around Comics Discussion
Center.
Center, yeah.
Club. ACDC. Discussion Club.
Discussion Club. ACDC. Not affiliated with the band at all. Please don't send us any letters.
I'm leaning more towards club every moment we talk
the club.
About
club.
The club.
The club.
Around Comics.
Sounds like a porno site, though.
That's cool. I like that.
If you subscribe to the club, you'll subscribe to our 10 other podcasts.
For $19.95 a month.
MILF Club.
If you folks don't already know, we with the relaunch of the... Of the shows, we came up with the concept of each month, one of us would pick a movie, a trade, and a CD,
yes,
and have the rest of the panel and you, the listening audience,
get down on it,
all three,
and get exposed to hopefully some new fun stuff.
Go to town on it.
And this month's selection was Scotty's. Mm-hmm. And Scotty, what will we be talking about on the show this evening?
My selections. Well, do you want to just go like one off, like one by one, or just read them off?
Just go ahead, read them off, and then we need to
do our intros.
Okay, The Witching Hour by Chris Pacello and Jeff Loeb, and Open Range with Kevin Costner and that bidding, and Robert Duvall, and Clutch, Blast Tyrant, were my club picks.
And we certainly want to mention a couple things here before we get into our discussion. First of all, Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. Uh-huh. It's located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. Jesus. Please drop by and say hello if you are in the...
Hello!
And this episode of Around Comics and the club... edutainment book of the month.
ACDC, whatever. Not affiliated with the band.
the trade paperback selection was sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection, The Witching Hour, to Around Comics listeners for an amazing 40% off the cover price. Get your copy today for only $11.97.
Does this still apply?
It will.
Well, people might not listen to the, you know...
Yes,
sure.
Well, the additional, and Cameron gave an additional discount on that. It was a drop from 35% to 40% off for the club selection.
InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. It's your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essential showcases, archive editions, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 ship for free. InStockTrades.com.
Thank you.
Give me my books!
Give me my books.
And we'll have our selections for the next month at the end of the show.
I don't know what they are, and I'm excited. I want to pick a comic book, music, and movie that are all the same. I have to find one that is
all I gotta
the
say.
Blues soundtrack to a movie that was based on a comic.
Yeah, Blues Brothers, the comic, the movie, and the soundtrack. Yeah.
There's no comic Blues Brothers.
There has to have been a Blues Brothers comic at some
point. Oh, right.
I want to know what everybody thought of Clutch, Blast Tyrant, the album Blast Tyrant from Clutch.
Clutch.
What'd you guys think?
Sal, you go.
I really liked it. Well, I really liked it. It's right up my alley, sort of southern rock meets metal sort of
That's how you roll.
That's how I roll. Yeah. It actually, listening to it, I was like, wow, you know, I wish there were more bands like that because I'd probably buy more music.
Yeah.
Because I don't, there's just not that much music that I listen to. I grew up. That's the shit I listened to, you know? And so I really enjoyed it on that level, and I really got a Sabbath, Black Sabbath kind of vibe for it. Lyrically, it was interesting. I mean, I'm not really a music guy in the first place. I mean, it's always sort of background noise almost. I'm just not that
it's
into
background
music.
To you right. rocking.
Yeah, you know.
Put something on while I rock.
So, but I, you know, with the, you know, obviously with the club, I was trying to
get in there,
get into it, you know, and kind of really listen. I think musically they're really talented. I mean, they do some really very cool changes and pacing stuff and everything. But lyrically, I was a little.
Stop the rocking.
I liked it, but it was like. I got the feeling sort of like every line was just written for that line. You know what I mean? It's like just the effect of that line.
Yeah.
Well, I'll get to this because my comparison actually deals with this.
As opposed to any sort of like I didn't feel any type of like cohesiveness with the lyrics throughout the song.
Right.
You know, it was just like kind of, what can I put here?
Sure.
That. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I enjoyed the album, but that was sort of the only thing that I kind of... I even didn't enjoy it, but it's just sort of something
you
I
were
noticed.
Looking for a lot of meaning.
Well, nothing.
I mean, you, no, not that you were wanting it, but maybe seeing if there was meaning and didn't find
yeah,
a lot
I didn't
of
really find a whole lot of meaning. And it was just something about sort of like how... Because he does like clever things with the lyrics, and there's some funny stuff in there and everything, but it was... Like, it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, a lot of the songs. I mean, I didn't really, like, get anything from the songs lyrically. I mean, other than just sort of, it's a rockin' song. But, like I said, overall, I mean, I really enjoyed it because it is one of those, you know.
I think lyrically he just paints, like, I don't listen to that much music where somebody lyrically can make me see pictures of stuff. And he, like, doing what you're talking about where he's just saying a line, he will craft a line that always makes me see some kind of an image, and it's usually some kind of funny, weird, twisted southern image, like, you know, with the talking about the with the shotgun
line.
Yeah, like the shotgun and the in the back of the jacked up Ford and you know, just stuff like that where it's like almost just odd southern rock poetry where it's not necessarily about anything but just giving you a sense. And there's probably a lot of meaning there that I don't pay attention to, or I'm not really looking for, because I just think it's like fun music.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. I mean, that's. I don't think you can look at it real deeply. I mean, it just is just good rocking, you know, fun
just
stuff.
Kick ass.
Well, then what, and, Chris?
I decided that it was very good to clean your house and paint your bedroom too.
Wow. Jesus Christ!
I thought it was good to
concept
fuck to myself.
That's what I did last weekend. I
washed my car.
No, I was painting around the house last week, and enjoy. I love southern rock. It's probably a little bit more amped up than what I usually listen to.
Sure,
I'm more of a
redneck, you know, country.
Johnny K.
Right.
Johnny Paycheck.
No, I like the kind of Molly Hatchet Southern rock flair to it. Yeah, good to clean your house too. I enjoyed it.
Good to clean your house too.
Tom Caters.
I loved it. You know, the funny thing was when you say the thing about when Saul said about crafting a line solely for the purpose of the line. Mm-hmm. What it reminded me a lot of was one of my favorite authors, and I know someone is gonna give me shit about this, but it reminds me a lot of most of the stuff that Oscar Wilde. Okay. Does where Oscar Wilde only really wrote one huge long thing that ever made sense. All he's known for is his like one line quotes that are very clever and are very like isn't that interesting.
Right, you almost know, like anecdote.
Yeah. Like very short, very like distinct little bits to it, which I think are extremely entertaining, which is what I thought Clutch was.
Right.
You know, I my favorite songs on that album, I love like The Mob Goes Wild, and I love Prophets of Doom.
Prophets of Doom.
Yeah,
is awesome.
They have like
never trust a white man driving a black man.
Yeah, I mean, there's the very there isn't overall necessarily like a narrative where there's like a beginning or the end of the story, but I appreciate and the fact of like the very sort of clever little turns of phrase, because I think that's like a very hard thing to do in writing and like music is to like really get like a really catchy turn of phrase. And I also loved the melodies in the songs. I thought it sort of also reminded me a little bit of the first time I listened to it. I didn't pick up on everything the first time, and it reminded me of the first time when I was like in high school, and my friend's older sister had me listen to Jesus and Mary Chain, and it just sounded like fucking noise.
Right.
Well, you know.
Jesus and Mary Chain.
Yeah.
It would punch you in the face.
No, but I loved it. No, but I loved it. But the first time you listen to it, you don't pick up. You pick up bass and drums, and you don't pick up melody the first time you listen to it.
The staccato of of the vocals on in Clutch is always interesting. The way it's like sometimes
he's got one of the catchiest voices.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
and it's very clear. You can hear what he's saying.
He enunciates everything.
Yeah. Like it's not hard to understand. It's not like a metal band where the voice is just another instrument that's just saying words like a guitar. Or
that's
a drum.
Why. Yeah. That's why it was like. I was kind of. That's why I brought up the whole thing with the lyrics, because it could have been like any other band where it was just, like you said, like another instrument.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't. It was more than that, but not quite.
Not what you wanted. Quite not the next step beyond that.
Yeah. And like I said, I found it extremely entertaining, but it was just. There was something about it where, like.
You know, the next album after Blast Tyrant actually addresses that exactly what you're talking about. Like almost every song, I think, on Robot Hive Exodus is a storytelling song where there's a point to it. Like
but I also really dug, when I listened to it musically, I heard a lot of, I heard like funk, I heard like there was some acoustic stuff, there was a lot of psychedelia to me, which is like the fact that for a metal band or like a southern rock band, there was a lot of very circular guitar, you know, there wasn't a lot of like boom, 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 you know, well, constant over and over again.
And Clutch is a band that hasn't been afraid to change their style. And, and almost to the, you know, I don't want to say detriment of their popularity, but I think that they've alienated certain groups of their fans by changing. But they're not going to let that get in the way of them.
Well, I think in a way, I mean, their original style only lasted for kind of a few albums. And their fan base has grown so much past what their fan base was at that point that I don't believe. I mean, there's always going to be people that prefer that, and it's usually younger people.
Well, I mean,
because when I was younger, I probably would have preferred the metal side of Clutch, and now I prefer this side of Clutch. That's like a chill jam style rock band.
Well, see, the thing though I appreciate though is it doesn't have too much of the jam style thing of where songs sort of meander off into areas that don't.
Lead it's not
anywhere.
Like a 12-minute song.
Yeah, like, the song, it's a good, like, solid album where it has 13 songs that last about 4 minutes apiece. They don't, like, dick around with, like, we're at the end, we're going to do our 12-minute finish to this. You know, really at the beginning, the first song, Mercury, is, like, really the only time where, like, they have sort of an indulgence into that is, like, because the first half of the song is a bit of, like, feedback and all that, but then they get into like lyrical, you know, and they get into all that stuff, but they only really do that for like a minute. They don't like make you sit through 15 minutes of like feedback and
funny
all
enough
time.
That
like that first song, each time I listen to it, I'm like, it's like I wanted that song to be longer. It was like they got to that point where it was like, you know, and they just start doing the weird noise, and I'm like, no, don't stop that song.
The thing that I think that Clutch does well on all albums, and especially this one, is they do the ramp up to the fucking payoff of every song, where it's, you know, nice little verse, and then before the chorus comes in, they really
know how to kick you in the ass. They have nice choruses too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, you have to, if you're going to build your songs up to that point, you have to have an actual payoff that's worth it, which is, you know, having a melody and having something that you can remember.
Yeah.
You know, when you
and it's good that, like, I find them to be a band that. Because usually when somebody says something like, oh, it's catchy, it's usually because it's so simple. And Clutch, to me, always finds a way to not only have a simple, catchy chorus or hook lyrically and musically, but it's also creative in what he's, like, what he's saying, he's thought about. It's not just like, yeah, yeah, let's rock.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, let's rock. You know, he's coming up, like, it's the closest to me that I can find to be, like, poetry in a way for that kind of music where he's really sitting there crafting.
But it also has a great sense of humor. I mean, it's not like a serious, like, oh, woe is the world type of thing. Like, even when they're talking about going to Canada, and, you know, like, it's a joke, you know, it's sort of, which I sort of enjoy, but one of the things I hate is when a band gets too
serious.
They start taking themselves too seriously, and they sort of start getting, like, too high and mighty. So I really appreciate the fact that even though it's clever but funny. It's not clever, like, look how much smarter we are than you.
It's, it's not Maynard where it's like, we went to art school and we've sold a lot of albums, and now,
we're
irreverent.
You know, I am than you. It's not that.
No.
It's
like, we are a band that has made most of our fans, most of our money, and most of our career spent on the road having fun, interacting with crowds.
And this will be even funnier when we get to my pick, because my pick probably could not be any more opposite from Clutch. But I loved it. I've never heard any Clutch before. There was a bar in Madison, actually, the Paradise Club, that used to have $1.25 mixed drinks on Tuesdays that I used to go to all the time. And they used to play Clutch, and I did not realize this
that it was Clutch
until I was at my apartment and I was listening to it. And then I was at a Halloween party, and I was talking about Clutch, and someone was like, you know, they used to play Clutch at the Paradise. And I was like, but it was the early albums, and I sort of recognized the voice, but the sound wasn't the same.
Right.
But all of a sudden, I was like, oh, that makes sense, because I couldn't remember the voice, but I was like, I've heard this voice before, but this music doesn't match the voice. Go to the Paradise Club.
Yeah, for anybody who did like this album, I will say that you can probably buy any of Clutch's, like, last six albums, and you will not. While they they change up and add different flavors to each album, to me, there's not a bad song on any of them. I mean, it's the first band, weirdly enough, that every album of the, like I said, like, their last six albums, I enjoy every single track on every single album.
How often do they come out with stuff? Like, how, of six albums, what sort of time frame is
their last two albums came out maybe 3 years apart.
Okay. Are they like a year and a half apart band? Like, did they
maybe a little
for
longer?
A while, I thought they were doing like each year almost.
I think for a while they were. I know, like, from Beagle Street to Oblivion, which is their last one, and then the Robot Hive Exodus, which is the one before that, was about 3 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe a little less than that, but around that. They spend a lot of time on the road.
Ironically enough, they're playing
tonight
here at the Riv.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
But we were going to go see them, but they're opening for Coheed and Cambria, and I didn't want any piece of that.
And in preparing for this, I went online and read some reviews of the album. I wanted to see what other people. It varied. I mean, you had people that were, and we can't even touch on it. It's like, anybody that was already a Clutch fan loved it.
Yeah.
And then there were people that didn't, you know, obviously just not their style of music.
Sure.
You know, the comments were generally like, any negative stuff was, you know, it's stoner rock.
Yeah.
There's nothing original. There's nothing, you know, that kind of thing. But then the people that were like, oh, I like Clutch, I always wish Clutch was a little something different, and now they are. You know what I mean? It's like they're still doing what they wanted to do and what I've always loved, but now they've just done a little something different, a little something better for me on this album, that kind of thing.
For me, there's nothing wrong with a band, like, because I've run across the same thing where people liked what they were before, and I truly, and this is just my opinion, and I could be full of shit, but Clutch's early albums when they were very young, they were playing the music that was big at that time because they were young and they were angsty and their music reflected that. And partially, I don't think Neil was nearly as good a singer as he has become over the years. So he sang to what he was capable of singing, which just ended up being a lot of yelling.
Right.
And I think over the years the band has gotten better. Their skill level has raised, and there's nothing wrong with a band. When people say, oh, they're not doing anything new, well, there's nothing wrong with a band just being a part of the musical wheel of great rock
and roll.
Yeah,
not everybody's
going
to be groundbreaking.
Yeah, not every band has to go to the lab and try to cook up some, because guess what? You can't really. And when you try to, you'd end up being the new Pucifer album from Maynard that sounds like bitch shit.
I did hear a lot, or read a lot of comparisons to... Jesus, now I can't think.
Corrosion of Conformity?
No. Dave Windorf's band.
Monster Magnet.
I could see that a little bit. Rock. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think lyrically a little different, though.
Lyrically different. Well, I didn't think musically a lot different. I mean, I think they've been on the scene around. I mean, they're kind of at that same level of, like, they got their core fan base.
Right.
And, but, I mean, I find the two bands very different. I could see where people... kind of put them together, but
I find Clutch they sort of fall more psychedelic, and just the everything's so circular in the songs. Mm-hmm. Everything is much more, you know, all the guitar lines are just like over and over,
right.
But not like in a, you know, a bad way.
No, in a kick-ass way.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
open
glad,
range.
Yeah, I'm glad everybody enjoyed. Glad everybody enjoyed the album, because I was iffy on. Clutch is that band that people either they're like, yeah, whatever, or they really, really love it.
There's nothing wrong with just kicking ass.
Yeah.
Speaking of kicking ass.
Yeah.
I'm almost certain they'll be overly confident in their numbers. Especially if we're standing right out here in front of them. It's not like we'll have any advantage, but if they're out there with us, then they won't have as much as they might have otherwise. Now, I don't figure all of them to be killers, maybe. Only two or three like Butler will have done much of it. I'll be looking to him. The others will be hired men, probably. Saddle Champs, maybe ex-army. The rest will be cowpunchers. They won't want to line up in front of us. It'll happen fast once I start, so just keep yourself moving forward. And they'll either move or root, maybe even freeze up. It don't matter which. You just start right in on them with that scatter gun. When you're done both barrels, just drop it where you stand, pull your pistol, and make a run for that building where we stash them others. I'll be trying to do the same if I can.
Sounds like you got it all worked out.
Yeah. Except the part where we don't get killed.
All right, so now we're on to Open Range.
Let's
hear what some people... Tom, let's start with you this time.
Yeah, start with Tom.
Hadn't seen it before.
I had not seen it.
Chris and Tom, we'll start with Chris and Tom, because
we've seen it multiple times.
I had really enjoyed it, and I had to say I was a bit apprehensive beforehand, because I have the same trepidations everyone else has with Kevin Costner movies, where... You know, they're a bit self-aggrandizing, and, you know, the main characters are always, like, super, like, angsty, yet figure out a way to, like, make things work. You know, like Postman or Waterworld, such damaged people.
Hey.
You know, but I loved
fixing those pictures and Bull Durham.
Yeah, a little bit of that. There's a little bit of that in there. But Open Range, I loved. I thought it was perhaps a little, just a tad long, but it didn't ruin the movie for me at all. It has perhaps one of the best gunfight scenes.
Isn't it awesome?
In a fucking movie I have ever seen.
Because it's so random and not perfect.
And like, also, I loved the love story between him. I hated when I was like, oh, Kevin Costner's going to sleep.
We're gonna fight on this one.
Kevin Costner's going to sleep with this guy's wife, and that's where the moral thing's going to... And I was just like, God, that's so fucking trite.
Yep.
Like, what a horrible Western, like, oh, he's a man. But it was sort of... nice to have a movie where it was like the reveal was
my sister.
Yeah, you know, that was, I thought that was kind of okay in a movie to have that happen, because I'm so sick of Westerns where like everyone, you know, it was nice to see Kevin Costner, who was such a damaged character in that movie, have like a moment where like he was allowed not to be an asshole. Mm-hmm. Because the whole movie is based upon the fact that his entire life And his life story is based upon the fact that he's like never allowed not to be like a killer.
Yeah, he's had to be
kicking someone over and finally one opportunity in his entire life where he gets to do like the right thing, both in fighting the sheriff and in like having a relationship with that, you know, with Annette Bening, who for an older woman I would have done.
Yeah, she's still very beautiful.
But, I mean, the whole, to me, the whole crux of the end of that movie is like he has a choice of whether he can just walk away from her, you know, the perfect opportunity for him to finally have a life outside of just being an asshole or a loner or being outside of society. But he doesn't, you know, he chooses to sort of enter society just like Robert Duvall does. They both say, you know, this, we made our stand, we did what we thought was right, now let's
I think they both kind of realized that as much as they wanted to hold on to it, the world had started to pass them by. What they did was the world wasn't the place for that anymore. They weren't going to be free rangers anymore.
The relationship between Robert Duvall and Kevin Costner, to me,
Robert Duvall was amazing.
Yeah,
Robert Duvall was
the relationship between those two, to me, was so incredible, because it was like anybody who's had a lifelong friend or a friend for 10 plus years
or a dad,
understands that relationship. That
life.
It's like the way that they had them bicker about stupid things. Like
they were an old married couple.
Yeah,
but you know, the thing to me that really struck to me is that, like, I can identify with the fact that you have someone who's like a father figure to you, and you live every day with them for like years and years and years, and all of a sudden they tell you something that completely blows your mind.
Their real name?
Oh, yeah, or like, I was once married. You know, but I imagine my own relationship with my own father. Right. Like, my father obviously has things in his life he's never told me.
Sure.
Like, my father could obviously tell me something that would just blow my mind, you know?
Right.
And that's how crazy those types of relationships are, where you get really comfortable, and then all of a sudden you're in a situation where, you know, you have to express, you know,
there may
reality.
Not be a tomorrow, so I need to tell this person.
But
this
I liked how real, I liked how they, it seems like everything in that movie, they filmed in a way so differently than every other movie approaches. Every other movie focuses on the most important moments of things and the big parts of things. And this one, like the relationship for them, they always focused on their weird little bickering about nothing, like walking across the board or like a teacup or mud on the carpet. Like, it was like, well, they focus on, and even then when they get to the gunfight, they're, it's like, again, it wasn't like this okay corral of like this crazy action.
But the thing is, you'd never see a gunfight in that movie. Every single bit of violence that happens in that movie up until that gunfight is off screen. You see what happens after a gunfight, you see what happens after someone gets the shit beat out of them. You don't see a real fight.
Any real violence in it?
In that you
I don't know. Whenever they found him in the camp before they
You didn't see the actual.
You see a little
event.
Bit. You see Well, when they find the guys who are going to come, you know, attack.
Oh yeah,
They do a little bit, but you don't see a gunfight until
the gunfight.
The gunfight. You
my favorite moment of violence in the movie.
I know what you're gonna say.
No,
it better be.
No, I was talking. My favorite scene is.
It's
when,
everyone's favorite.
Is
moment.
When Costner pops the guy in the forehead.
Oh, of course.
But my favorite moment of violence is when Kevin Costner smashes the beer mug up against the barkeeper's ear by
when
throwing it.
Well, actually, I did like too when Costner popped what's his name. The kid that he caught cheating.
Oh, yeah. He knocked him off the horse.
He knocked him off the horse. Yeah. That was fantastic.
Diego Luna was pretty good in that movie, too. It's just like...
Button.
Also, one of the great things about the movie is that they take all these cliches. One of the things I really liked is there are a lot of Western cliches. Yeah,
the gunfight was the perfect cliche broke.
Yeah, like, I'm the loner who's an awesome gunfighter who walks into town. Takes that cliche and doesn't make it trite, you know, somehow finds a way to like still make it okay to watch without immediately being like, oh, this
well, look
is
how slow they all. I mean, you always watch a movie in a gunfighter westerns, it seems like everybody all of a sudden has superhuman speeds and they can jump and run and really fast. And this one's like completely in an open field with old men,
right?
Walking and running at old man speed, just kind of fumbling around with rickety guns, kind of just like, ugh, and everybody's scared. And
even the idea of like Kevin Costner planning the fight out beforehand. You know, it's like, oh, you know, we're going to plant some guns in the barn. We're going to, you know, I mean, this is what we're going to, and sort of, you know, it's like, I love the moment of when it became, you know, Robert Duvall is the mentor in that, in the movie, and his father figure. But then it, when it came to that moment, those roles reversed.
He had
because
to teach him Duvall, how to
yeah, you had to teach him how to.
Duvall, I love the fact fight. That everyone in the town left the town.
Yeah.
I love that.
Like they got out of town.
Get the hell out of that.
We only have 10 buildings and you're going to shoot the shit out of it. Like, go up on the hill by the church.
What was the horse, the stable keeper's name?
Oh,
he died right after they. He was dying while filming that movie.
Oh, wow.
The whole time.
He was great, too. He's a great click.
He said, what'd you do? What he said, just my ankle got over there. I got all hopped up on those Cubans.
The fact that movie got me all hopped up. My last thing I'll say about the movie is the thing I loved is the scene when they're in the general store and he buys the cigars and the chocolate.
Yeah.
You know, just because what not a lot of movies would focus necessarily. Yeah.
They take him get some whiskey and smoke a cigar. But the fact that he's sitting there, like, before he thinks he's going to die and goes...
I'm going to eat some chocolate, and I'm going to smoke some cigars.
Yeah,
I got a sweet tooth.
Yeah.
How did Robert Duvall live through the last part of the gunfight? I didn't understand that.
Well, it's movie magic.
The human body's a lot tougher than the movies make us believe. You can get shot and live, especially if you
got shot 9 times.
Well, from how it was filmed, it would appear that Robert Duvall got shot like 5 times at almost point blank range.
You could be shot. I mean,
caught him
first off,
and walked away.
Yeah, I just did it once.
Yeah, I don't think he got
maybe
shot 5 times.
Yeah, I don't think 5. I think he must
have
been human.
We may have to roll the tape.
All right, else that you wanted to talk about that you...
You didn't like the... Yeah, you didn't care.
I loved the moments in between. I loved the way that it was shot. I liked the story. The relationship between Kevin Costner and Annette Bening seemed a little bit forced. You know, relationship for relationship's sake. I just...
See, I loved the relationship.
They roll into town, and... They meet, but under very hurried circumstances of, you know, she and her brother have to help patch this person up. So there's probably like 30, 40 seconds of them actually seeing each other. And then it's like the next day there's, you know, he can't get her out of his mind. You don't know what her frame of mind is, but it's like this kind of like add water for instant love affair.
I think when I think if this movie was set in today, I would have the exact same thoughts as you. But for a movie set then, for a group of guys that, especially cattlemen, who roam in the middle of nowhere for months and months on end without seeing civilization, purposely staying outside of civilization, you get to a place where you find an attractive woman, especially you're talking about somebody in their early 40s, a woman in that time.
Not a spring chicken. Yeah.
At that time, you know, girls and guys, they're married at 17, 18 years old, early, younger. I think that your psyche's, I can't know, none of us lived back then, but
they never, and maybe I need to be a little bit hand-fed for this, but they never established that this was really a magic love at first sight
I don't think it was supposed to be. I think it was a thing, and you even learn.
She talks about
to love each other in a way. Like, there's something about you that I want to marry you, but I never felt like they both were like, I'm goo goo gaga over you.
There was never intense passion.
She talks about the fact that, like, she's older.
Yeah.
And she never met anyone, and you live in a small town, and that sort of...
Yeah.
I bet they get divorced in the sequel.
Yeah. In closed range.
I took away from the relationship the same thing you did. To me, it was not really knowing, but it seemed indicative of the time period more than anything else.
Yeah.
That she is an older woman that, like you said, lived in a small town her entire life. Grew up, you know, with her brother, basically working with her brother, and who's a doctor, taking care of people.
Try to live up to that, suitors.
And she has, you know, she has this very brief moment with someone, and for whatever reason, and they never, and I think the reason it worked is because they never showed it like, you said. They weren't like crazy,
yeah.
I'm, you know, going to change everything in my life to be with you in love. It was just something.
Like, here,
it
you
was
are
a moment.
Potential.
It was
yeah.
this. It was this moment, and they both were.
Well, think about
it. They both had gone through their entire lives without.
And his life was terrible as well. I mean, he spent his life in war killing people.
I do have to say the only part that I sort of giggled at myself is when he was like, I was a part of an elite I was a part of an elite army group. Like, as soon as anyone says that, I'm always like, a little bit to myself. I was like, and it was fine if they would have just taken those, if they wouldn't have said it like that.
Like that.
Because every time anyone's like, I was a member of a neat army group, right. I was just like.
When, I did love when they went in to the police station and. Rallied Robert, up the dudes and like put Cal the chloroform. That was just funny because like, even then it's not like every other Western or any kind of movie you always see. It's like whenever anybody decides to do some shady physical shit like that, it's all of a sudden like it's innate in them to know how to do it. And,
right.
And this made them look like we've never really chloroformed anybody before. Yeah,
we're
going to
give it a shot.
Yeah, and it's just, I think the beauty of that movie lies in the fumbling around of everybody.
Yeah.
Like, everybody has this facade, like, especially the cops and the.
Hard ass.
Everybody has the facade of badass, but everybody's the same. No, nobody knows what they're doing.
Well, that's, and I think that's what. Tom, you had mentioned before, it walks this amazing line of. All the classic sort of tropes from Westerns, and using all of them, but like I said, and doing it in a way, though, that it made it okay, that it wasn't, you know, and I think that's why, because they made the characters so much more human, so that when they were in those sort of classic situations, it didn't seem cheap.
Right.
You know, it made more sense. I mean, you look at it compared to a lot of just older Westerns, and it's very much like a million Westerns that have been done before, but it's that character flaws that makes it different. Different.
That, well, and the moments in between. It was, and that's what a lot of the movie was about. It was about the moments in between.
I mean, for me, just the Duvall Costner relationship the whole time. I mean, their dialogue back and forth to me just did it for me.
Maybe
I mean,
one of my favorite Robert Duvall performances.
Yeah, he was just amazing.
And whenever they shot the dog, I was. I'm
talking about
I had
movie,
a moment.
Like a Western cliche. Like he's already pissed his friends got shot, and he's like, "You shot my fucking dog."
Yeah. Well, you know that's the funny thing about Kevin Costner's character is like
very quiet,
and they showed more moments of him being sort of sensitive and caring,
right.
than being this killer guy. You know, this killer. You know, gunfighter.
Right.
Yet.
He didn't die
from the
an
beginning.
Explosion for the entire movie.
Well, there were a lot of moments of confusion, and if not confusion, then deliberation of should I do this, should I not do this? You would catch those. And he plays that better than just about any other actor.
Confused.
I'm going to go left. No.
Keanu Reeves does confused really
well, that's because he is.
What?
I did love the scene when they were walking across...
Madonna?
It was just the weird,
water?
Like I said, the weird stuff that they chose to show, like it's raining outside
and it floods because there's no fucking plumbing,
there's no sidewalks and shit like that, and then it's like a 5-minute scene of them trying to figure out how not to get it, like to stay as dry as possible. They're like fumbling around with a plank, trying to walk across a plank, and of course they get soaking wet, and then they try. There's everything about it, all the little subtle things that they chose
how
to focus on.
How much it must have sucked to live back then, because you're obviously constantly soaking wet.
Oh, God.
Smell bad, soaking
wet.
Yeah,
rain actually played a big part in this in the movie.
Beautifully shot movie.
Oh, yeah.
Shot movie. For people that don't know, it was like completely made outside of the Hollywood system. No studios involved.
I think it was filmed in Alberta, a lot of it, I believe, from watching the credits.
The credits.
So,
but,
all right.
Good Western.
Good. I'm glad everybody enjoyed that. Now let's get to the thing that we all are kind of eh.
We're all like,
all right. Hey, what are you doing in my book?
The Witching Hour.
Bend your own.
The Witching Hour. Let's begin.
All right. The Witching Hour.
First of all, thank you to Cameron and Inside Trades for sending us copies.
I'll say right off the bat, real quick, is a few of the things for choosing this was, it was a confined story. There's no trades that follow it. It's a book that I love the art. I don't hate the story, and I don't love the story. And I thought. that's a perfect book for everybody to have some sort of opinion on.
Yeah.
So,
begin.
Okay. I thought both artistically and in the writing there were moments of brilliance in it, but then there were just like the entire sort of story as a whole was so sort of disjointed,
choppy.
Yeah, and there wasn't. I mean, I liked the atmosphere they set with it because you had sort of the flashbacks.
I felt like it should have gone on longer.
When I got finished with it, I was like.
It was prologue.
It was like, yeah, that was a good setup. Now I want the rest of the story kind of thing. But there were some just fantastic. I mean, artistically, it was great. There's great stuff. I do have sometimes problems with Bocello's art. I can't tell sometimes what's going on. Mm-hmm. There's moments where I'm not sure what I'm supposed to be looking at. And with the story itself, there were times where I wasn't sure what I was reading. You know, I was like, there's just moments where like it didn't make sense. The story is set up so that, you know, you have all these sort of unrelated events going on, and then in the end they all tie together.
Well, there's like the group of Wiccans.
Right.
Yeah. Coded by color or whatever, the group of Wiccans. Yeah. And obviously, it's almost like it's like they go around giving people choices to almost fix their life if they want to. It's like, it's your typical... And that's what it's a typical, you can go this route or this route.
Right.
Which are you going to pick? One route will send you on the path of good and your life will work out.
The red pill or the blue pill?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's Alice in Wonderland type
I thought
shit.
The weird thing, though, is I thought at times it was extremely overwritten. Like, there was twists that didn't really need to happen in the story to continue the moment. Like, the thing to me that sort of bothered me is, like, looking at it was in three... It was divided up into three...
It was three issues. There was three prestige issues.
And I sort of thought, like...
I wish they would have just wrote it as its own thing, and you wouldn't have had to chop everything up so much.
And I also thought, if you're going to chop it up, I was like, why don't... None of these... Some of the stories don't intertwine at all. There's no need to carry them over
and you're
to
waiting,
an entire
you're waiting,
issue.
You're waiting
for them to tie up, but they don't. Some of the stories don't intersect. And I was thinking, you know, it's a great framing idea to how to tell a story. You could tell one of these stories in an issue.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to spread it out over.
You could have told one of the stories and the witch backstory in each issue.
Yeah, and then it would have kept going. But it was like, and then the other thing that's sort of, you know, and to say ahead of time, I loved the art. I felt the weird thing was they introduced some characters like Red, who never. Find out her story. She just shows up.
She's apparently very crazy.
Yeah, but we don't really know. And when I got to the end, I was like, God, is this just a setup? Because I would think like that would be the next part of that story would be her.
My prediction is DC and Vertigo wanted this to take off.
I would think so because it's a framing. It's solely, totally set up as being a perfect frame for a story.
This could have been, like I said, if they would have written... If it was intended to be a graphic novel, take out a couple characters, a couple of the scenarios, and write it as its own graphic novel.
Yeah.
Because it was too choppy. Or, like we said with the issues, or this is a great, like, magic version of 100 Bullets to me. Like,
yeah, I could see that. It's almost like if
this was set up and then they would have cleaned it. Honestly, if you probably would have given it, like, not... Because Jeff Loeb, to me, I think can write really good at times, and then sometimes...
There's parts of this that's written really well.
Right.
At times, though...
I liked a lot of Gray's, what he was talking about.
But at times, I was just like, God damn, you know, like, stop
talking
over it. You know, like, at times I felt like, God, you know, like, I know so much about his character, yet I don't see him doing
anything. He's not doing anything.
Yeah, or, you know, and then all of a sudden I see... And I also felt weirdly betrayed by the fact at the end where White sort of twists the thing on the psychiatrist. And I don't really know why. I mean, just as from a guttural point of view from a reader, like, it got to the end and I felt a little... I don't mind being deceived as a reader, I guess, but I like a weird justification for it. Because I feel like if you're magical and then you go to the extra step of, like... portraying all this extra stuff, like, I need that other something else to make that.
Well, the only reason that he did that, I mean, he needed a reason for her to tell the witch backstory.
Yeah, I mean,
so he put it in the psychiatrist,
and that's why it felt
a little
easy. And that's why it felt a little like when I got to that, I was like, oh, I was like, well, that's sort of yeah. is a little bit off to me. But the weird thing is, the way I would describe this book is, it's like a really well-written story and well-drawn that got thrown into a blender and someone threw like an extra 1,000 words
yeah,
into that book.
Didn't come out right.
Like, I could believe that, but that means it's bad.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it was like, but at moments, like, I could pick out any like couple pages and be like, oh, that's pretty good.
If
but
I were
overall.
To use one word to describe this book, and I know I feel like I'm butting in on your comment.
No, go for it.
Would be masturbatory. This book is very.
Oh, see, I don't agree.
I think so. I think agree this at is all. Totally that because I honestly, I still to this day don't know what the story is really about. And I
think I could see the writing being a little bit.
Yes,
that way.
The write. It's like, why don't I try and do this, come up with this great elaborate story, and then get Chris at his most experimental, where you're not going to understand anything that he's drawing.
Wow, you think this is his most experimental?
Well, you could
That's
call steampunk,
crazy.
Which is the most unreadable. I know you love wow. that. But it's like
I thought there was some this amazing art storytelling devices.
I own all the single issues and the trade. And I own, and so I look at this and I'm like, wow, he's doing all this stuff with halftones and the blowing up stuff, and I'm like, that's really cool.
But it does feel
no, but I thought there was I thought
it
there
feels
was
tossed
going
in.
On.
I mean, it feels tossed in at times.
Yeah,
like
it's just
like the framing sequence at the beginning where you see the woman getting murdered, and then at the end, by the time you get to the end, I was like, oh, wait, I kind of saw this before.
You
but there's nothing in the story that
But he also, I mean,
it's really yeah. overcomplicated.
But it looks really
the
nice.
The framing, I don't, like him framing this beginning and this very end.
Yeah.
I don't blame him on being confusing. I mean, he still has to work from
well,
a script.
Well, no, I mean,
that
visually.
Script, and that didn't make any sense to me
no,
from
I'm
a
just,
writing standpoint.
I'm just saying overall story-wise, right. like visually it looked really cool. But by the time I got to the end, I was like, wait a second. Was I supposed to remember what happened at the beginning
right.
of the story?
Did you ever feel like any of the characters beyond maybe White, maybe Gray, did you feel like any of the characters were given enough screen time for you to have any sort of interest or
I wanted
affection?
I did want to know Brown. I wanted to know more about the kid.
Who the fuck was Brown?
The little kid.
The kid that was
That's Black.
Oh, Black. I'm sorry.
Black. Whoa.
Damn.
Jeez.
I was like, God, did I miss something?
Somebody angry.
Confusing. Story's confusing.
I thought it definitely is good. It's, to me, it was confusing, but they wanted it to be, to a certain degree. I don't think you were supposed to
care about the characters?
But I think
I don't know. I think you were supposed to. I think they were supposed to be a certain amount of aloofness to those characters because they of who they are. Of it, you're not supposed to know everything about a mystical cult of Wiccans
well, I didn't even
that
care.
Travel
I did,
through
I,
history
I didn't even
and
care
time.
About the people that they were trying to help. It's like the crack whore. That,
well, you shouldn't
that,
care
that,
about
that
them. They're all bad people.
Well, no,
that story bothered me more than any of the other ones.
I never had a reason to root for her.
But the crazy thing with that story, though, is all the other stories you can kind of see where a character has to make a choice between like I choose this or that.
Mm. And like, should I get in a car with him and go to Vegas and leave this behind?
Yeah.
I'll be fine.
Yeah.
No, I'll choose to stay and do the bad thing.
But she's just like. I don't. Am I rich or? And then at the end, I was like, "What's the moral?" Like I was
right.
like,
I didn't understand hers at all.
I was like, no,
well,
"So the moral
I,
of her story
I think
was
she couldn't."
I thought that that every part of the like the character stories, the Wiccans.
I
thought everything was a great idea.
I thought Winter or
everything was a great
White.
Idea.
I thought White was awesome. I really liked that.
I
character.
Thought it was all good ideas. And like I said, to me, it felt like if. Maybe a different writer would have taken this concept and then stretched it out or made it a big story.
Or cut two or three of the stories out.
Well, yeah, that's
well,
what I mean.
There were times, I mean, it was just too many things thrown
too
in.
Too many characters, too many plot lines going
and
on.
Like the one thing I never, and maybe I just missed it, but like they seem to make a big deal of her case purse. Mm-hmm. But then... Why?
That to mean that
it turned out to be nothing really. I mean, it was like, why did they spend so much time talking about her purse and then never use it?
It's like it'd be like if you took like a House of Mystery, you know. And the thing about House of Mystery, what's great is
well, they talk about that in the introduction, I think.
Yeah, Gene Simmons. The thing about House of Mystery was great. It was the fact that you could have tons of little stories,
mm-hmm.
and you had a framing sequence to all those stories. But what happened was none of the stories ever had anything to do with each other because you had the little stories at all. And, like, the story of, like, the guy who has to drive the body out to Las Vegas
Dex
could be a really
a
cool
the fact
eight
that
page
he,
story.
But I thought that, I mean, you could, like I said, it felt to me like 100 bullets because all of a sudden I felt like Oh, the bartender's involved with that, which I didn't know. Right. The bartender's involved
with the body.
Yeah, the
bartender, I didn't even realize the bartender was a kind of a bad guy until later on.
You would have taken that
They
story,
never paid off that part of it.
And you just do an issue of that. And like I said, all of a sudden you have a mystical, magical Hunter Bullet style thing where it's just one-off stories that kind of tie together in an overall magical sense. This being as short as it was in three prestigious issues and Lowe being definitely somewhat masturbatory in what he wanted to write and also trying to halfway tell a story, just all in the end, the good idea got lost
fell apart. But at the same time, there's some, I think, just absolutely amazing turns of phrase in
stuff. Oh, he's talking like the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, there's just some great stuff in there, too. And I felt the same way about, I mean, at one point, about three quarters through the book, because I started to notice things that Pacello kept laying throughout the book, you know, over and over again.
All the words at the bottom?
The one that pointed out was like the half moon with the eye in it. That's throughout the entire book, and I didn't catch it until like almost at the end. Mm-hmm. And then I went back. I'm like, oh my god, that's everywhere in this book.
There's a half moon on the scarf.
Here's one of my favorite lines. And they're talking about Blue, and it says, "We knew virtually nothing about him other than he is a good soul, of which there are far too few, but more than you know." And that's
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
there was
some
tons of stuff exactly like that. Like, I did enjoy, and I'm the first person to say that I don't love Jeff Loeb's writing a whole lot. I don't necessarily go apeshit over every time he writes.
He's kind of the quintessential hit or miss writer for me.
And so there was parts of this where
this sequence, I fucking just, I mean, it was, and it's just
with the record.
I just fucking love that. Yeah.
There was times I think with the artwork to me that like go back one.
He is awesome at that stuff.
Like this right, there was the panel. I wish I had a page number, but the bartender is going to light Mrs. White's cigarette.
Yeah.
And when she's looking down at her cigarette and she looks up at the flame, he cuts to a panel that's underlaid under the other panels, and it almost feels like you're watching a quick David Fincher edited part of a movie
where she sees, and then
it cuts back.
What I thought, I mean, I don't know what you were thinking when I say that this is his most experimental. I think that he was going outside the box. Unfortunately, I think you shouldn't do that with this kind of crazy,
kind
complicated
of story
that makes no sense.
It made it too complicated.
Because all you're going to do is make it even more confusing.
You know, a lot of things I liked.
He did the same thing with the Last Death series that he worked on. He had lots of tiny panels that were, you know, where he was doing the same sort of thing. But because that story was more straight ahead, it was so much more entertaining for me to read. Whereas this, it's just
this whole thing.
I only own these books so I can look at the artwork.
Right. Well, I really like I love the flashback sequences, but I also find it sort of annoying that the flashback sequences are told in a style that is almost like 180 degrees away. Like because
really,
that's actually one of the things I thought.
I found it to be very powerful because it was so drastic.
But I didn't like at the end though that I felt like I was dicked around by it. A little bit when she was like, "Oh, I'm just playing with you."
Do you think her story? Then, I mean, did you in the end think that story was not true? Then,
well, no, but it leaves it open to that. I felt like reading this that every once in a while I was like, "Oh, hey, here's this." I felt like this was either one trade or 64 three-page issues. where all of a sudden I would get to the, here's the four pages where it's a flashback, right. And then all of a sudden it's the page.
But that's,
this,
I think,
and then
see,
it's the
I
page
think that comes
that.
Down to, I don't attribute that to the art as much as I attribute that to the writing.
Well, whoever,
and him fucking, like, it being so goddamn choppy that you didn't know when to expect to get to a flashback page.
I love his sequence of how it shows her getting hypnotized, and then it was sort of a clue that the flashback sequences were coming.
Right.
But then I'd read them, and I'd be like, okay, we get to the end. And then you get to the end. But the weird thing was nothing, you know, to me what really bothered me was it felt like things were transitioned well into. You would see the flashback coming, but then, like, every time you get to the end of flashback, you just end up someplace else. And it was never, you were never drawn out of that. Like, you get to the end of this flashback. And we'll that one a little
the,
bit.
The flashback pages are some of the prettiest.
They're pretty,
pages.
But I just but
the way
I felt
he
was
uses
like a
fabric
different book.
And
the whole
silhouettes
book
to break.
Well, when I because this is one of the first books that I think Chris did that visually, despite the script that he was working with, is I there's different senses I get when I'm reading a book. This was the first time an artwork made me feel cinematic things happening. the way that he would...
But without being drawn cinematically.
Right, that's what I mean. Yeah. Like, the fact that he will take five small panels and zoom out to let you see, because that makes me feel... And like I said, when she looks up at the flame, I felt that weird thing that when you watch a movie and a character will have a quick moment of realization and they'll do that weird editing where it just a quick flash and you see something in their mind and back to reality. I've never seen anybody artistically in a comic book make me understand that just with a drawing. And there was and with the flashback sequences made me feel like the montage sequences you might see in a film where characters will run through a screen and as that's happening another image will fade into the screen as it's all sepia tone. And I really felt that artistically it was – had the story flown better – it could have even had better transitions to match the writing.
I think there's less. I think there's less sort of mistakes in this than. I mean, to me, I think they did way more of what they exactly wanted to do with this than maybe we're giving them credit for. I mean, especially Bocello's stuff. I think
Bocello did exactly what he wanted.
I think he did and it wasn't like. Well, it was maybe experimental. Experimental. I mean, there's stuff in here I'm just catching now that is like layered as stuff from Watchmen.
Oh,
yeah. As far as like, I mean, visual cues of things that he just layers throughout the book.
The use of type in the borders of the at the bottom of the page along the sides. There's a whole little story that kind of goes along with this thing that adds a layer to it.
I think they really wanted to sort of give the feeling
that was annoying
of
at times, actually. I felt like I was like, because to me, I can see why because I was like, oh, I'm gonna read all of it, and I still felt I was like, yeah. It felt like the rest of the book, where I was like, oh, okay, it makes a sense.
I felt with some of the writing on this is exactly what, Sal, you were saying with the clutch. I thought that a lot of this story, it might have been exactly what he wanted to do, but I don't think exactly what he wanted to do was tell a good story. I think exactly what he wanted to do was put together a bunch of Oscar Wilde quotes.
I mean, though. That's what adds to the confusion, because, I mean, even if Chris did put all this, like, layer upon layer in the art where you could figure this out almost just visually. It's almost like the writing is putting all these red herrings in it that you don't like.
I think that's what they wanted to accomplish, and it didn't necessarily lend itself to a good A to B sort of story or even just a good tale. But I think they wanted to me, because I got an amazing feeling of sort of not confusion, but like there was a mystery. There was something that nothing was explained to me in it.
Sometimes.
And that was okay sometimes. Well, I don't know. I think it was on purpose.
I agree with you, but I think I agree with both of you. I think that there was some purpose behind it, but also because of, it's similar to, say, writing a television show. You have 45 minutes to tell your story, and with this, there was a certain amount of pages to tell a story, and I think you can almost tell there was times where you would get to a part, and definitely the last issue, the last prestigious issue in the trade, it felt like all of a sudden a lot of things are getting thrown together because maybe we didn't have enough time, or we didn't have as many pages as we thought.
The ultimate example of the fact is that it opens with that murder, and it ends with that murder. But there's no significance to the murder.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Who is the murderer?
Yeah.
Who's getting murdered?
Well, we know someone gets murdered, and but it doesn't.
That's
matter.
That's why I say, like, this.
No,
I
think
the murderer was
really
the,
nice.
Was the kid who was dumping the body?
Yeah, but why? But what does?
Because he owed the money.
But what does that matter at all?
Well,
there's no.
I just wanted more time. For me, this was one of, like, usually I read a book and I just don't not like it, or I really like it. This was one book that I just felt like there were seven pieces of it that I loved and nine pieces that I just felt, what'd you do?
Definitely.
I thought that at the heart of it is a fantastic idea and fantastic hints at good characters.
That's what makes me ultimately end up hating a book.
That's a great idea.
Damn it! When you see something that's great there, and then you see the person that's telling the story screw it up. And it just makes me mad because it's just like, I could love this book. And you're not letting me. God damn you.
Well, I get mad, but I hate books that have terrible ideas and are written very poorly. Well,
those,
so I hate
those. Don't
Those don't even register. Those don't go into the equation.
It does make me mad when I see such a good idea because then I want to swoop and be like,
this would make a great – you could take these Wiccans and you can make a fantastic, ongoing, like, limited horror series.
Yes.
Like, where every couple of like, you could come out with three prestige issues a year. You could, you know, I would even think the prestige issue might not work necessarily for this.
No, it's too small.
It's,
you got to do a graphic novel.
You could do a graphic novel.
OGNs.
You could do, oh, you could also do, if you have a good 10-page story, you could put out a single issue that has two good ones. You know, like, the format, the framing sequence, you can tell whatever length story you want to tell.
It,
you know?
It needs to be a webcomic.
I'll tell you one thing.
Yeah, it needs to just be told.
Before
to
this, I never really had an appreciation for Chris Bacello's work.
Really? Before this?
Yeah, I never really did.
Mike and I have talked about him a million times over.
I love the guy. Yeah. I don't think he's the greatest narrative ever, but, I mean, there's nobody...
Well, that was...
I mean, I love his bartender.
That was the problem I always had with this, because I would oftentimes have problems deciphering what was going on in the page, but...
And that's my problem with the book.
Well, I think that the reason that like, I liked this so much was that I almost sort of gave up.
Yeah.
Like trying to, it's like, you know what? I don't care if I understand this story or not. I'm going to continue. I have to finish reading it.
Mm-hmm. But the stuff I love about the art in the story is,
and there was enough things
page,
in it.
And some of the sometimes when he has all those tight panels, sometimes the panels bleed into each other.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Then sometimes they don't. And
yes.
Then sometimes.
And sometimes
they do
it'll
again.
Go diagonal.
Yeah.
Just very much Watchmen. I mean, it's like what I've seen Watchmen where
it's way deeper
like this
than
this panel will go down and forth and see. But yeah, it doesn't.
I mean,
no rhyme or reason.
This whole thing. I mean, there's
different. Between this and
this plays out
Alan
throughout
Moore
the entire book. This sort of image here, it's blood before it's gum, and then it's blood again later.
Yeah.
I mean, it just keeps playing out over and over again.
The flashback sequences with the use of the scarf.
Oh yeah,
the scarf
turns into a road. It turns.
But the scarf is telling you where to start at the page, and when you follow the scarf, it's like there's no panels on this page. It's a montage. Follow the scarf.
Done in the flashback. I just it wasn't
beautiful.
Three pages in it.
I love the page
with the
bells.
That
I thought that was just awesome.
Can't unring a bell.
That was a good.
It's a beautiful failure.
Yeah.
That's a great way to put it.
But this is one of
it's
those.
Really
and like I said, I picked this comic because it was a comic that
I mean,
absolutely love the art and absolutely love the fact that I wanted to love it. Like the whole book as a whole. And there's something in my mind that I keep trying to talk myself into, like. Just maybe it was good.
Like
maybe you're not remembering
it. Maybe
it
was
right.
Really good.
You
oh,
know, like
great
the
moments.
Scenes of like Dexter at the roulette wheel. You know,
awesome.
Like these great 2-page sequences. You know, which
and
you
then
know,
she's
great.
Feeding an elephant.
Yeah, there, yeah, there, well,
yeah exactly. Just like,
but even then, if they would have had more time, you could have jumped to the spots where like. You could have, you know, because I like the fact that they were always around animals. And it mentions really quickly, too bad it's at the end. It's near the end of the story when they finally, because you're always going, why the fuck are they always sitting with gorillas and elephants and shit?
I want somebody
and then
to
go. And they finally go, you know, it's like, oh, they're wicked. They want to be around. The only place that they can be around Earth and animals in New York is Central Park Zoo.
I want somebody to go through this and count how many crescent moons are in this thing.
9 million?
Yeah, I think there are like 9 million crescent... I mean, just over and over again, and he just keeps putting it in there, and well, in ways that it's like, oh, you don't even notice it at first.
Designs and patterns are something that Chris puts in
of
his books.
All his books. If you go back to Generation X days... Yeah. He, you know, he was one of those guys that started to do photocopies of stripe patterns and the X's.
Yeah, patterns.
And
I mean, you look in the backgrounds. I mean, he's drawing all these like, wallpaper and stuff. It's all about pattern, all about...
He's a designer, man. He's an artist. I mean, he's... And I can understand why there's times when people get confused by Chris's stuff. And I think, I mean, there's sometimes I'm confused by it. But usually... It's either Chris is working on a book that I don't necessarily enjoy reading, so I'll just look at it anyway. But I think that he is a guy in comics that walks a good line of being an artist and bringing an artistic composition.
Yeah, I mean, I and this isn't the most confusing I've ever read of his. I mean, I reserve that for steampunk. But
I actually found this to be the least confusing. I thought this was the cleanest version of Chris that I've seen.
I
even
think
to his
I would probably.
Have you read the Death miniseries?
What's that?
The what?
The Death miniseries?
Mm-hmm. I would put
the
more
last
of the,
one. I thought that was.
Oh, I didn't read the second one.
I would
one.
Put more of the confusion it. Just on the writing than on the art.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like the writing was just really.
Yeah,
just
I didn't, so I, jump I honestly around. Didn't yeah. have that many moments in this where I was confused by the art, but there has been times in the past with his work and other guys sort of in the same vein of his stuff. Even Scotty's stuff to some degree, there's times where I, you know, I don't know, you know, what's going on, but I really, I mean, I did love a lot of the, like I said, to me it was weird because there were enough amazing things in here that I couldn't say I didn't like
beautiful
it.
Beautiful failure.
But yeah. Well, we do have
some.
I do have an email
listener feedback
about the picks.
The this picks. Is fuck you guys from having me buy this.
No. This is Mario Muscar emailed
he's
us.
He's a,
I like that guy.
Mario, yeah, he's a he was on professional geek.
Yeah, he was on Beauty and the Geek. Some of you may know him from there. But he emailed us
I'm
and
sell
wanted
this book
to.
On eBay.
He said, "Just thought I would share my thoughts with you guys about the October selections. Feel free to share these on the show if you want." Okay. First, he started with Open Range. First, let me say that I do not care for Kevin Costner. I typically hate all his movies he appears in or has directed except for The Untouchables. I dislike him so much that when Open Range arrived in the mail from Netflix, my wife said, "Kevin Costner? Are you kidding me? You're going to watch a Costner movie?" Thanks to Scotty, yes, I am. And I like Robert Duvall and Western, so I tried my best to go into the movie with an open mind. Here's my running commentary as I watch the movie. Bad start. 1 minute into the film, I saw that Coob from Parker Lewis Can't Lose was a member of the cast.
That's awesome!
Yeah, I know.
Moe's.
I love Moe's.
Why is that a negative, Mario?
Yeah, I know.
Parker Lewis is my favorite shit, motherfucker!
Yeah, I know he was on ER, but I still think of him from
that
show.
I love that show.
20 minutes in, bored as hell, pretty much on par for Costner in my opinion. 22 minutes in, and I see why Scotty likes this movie. It's got Gandalf in it. 38 minutes, Duvall is badass. 39 minutes, Coob is dead. Good call. 46 minutes, I
hate freedom. Musty.
I hate when Costner talks. 47 minutes, stop talking. 53 minutes, Elmo's friend Mr. Noodle is screaming about something. Too bad he got the AIDS and died. 1 hour, 10 minutes, Entertainment Weekly's holiday movie preview issue is pretty... Costner looks pissed. 1 hour, 31 minutes, I hate Scotty. 1 hour, 58 minutes, Expelliarmus. I have no idea what that means. 2 hours, still bored. 2 hours, 10 minutes, it's over, no wait,
oh,
not
and
yet.
Expelliarmus.
It's a Harry Potter spell.
How did he miss the gunfight that lasted for 40 fucking minutes?
2 hour, well, it wasn't funny to talk about that. 2 hour, 10 minutes, it's over, no wait, not yet. 2 hour, 14 minutes, now it's over, thank God. Well, did it change my opinion of Costner movies? Nope, still sucks. Scotty is wrong, next.
I'm still watching.
That's crazy.
I know. Now he moved on to The Witching Hour. He said, I bought this in single issues when it originally was released and didn't really care for the story. The art is fantastic, though, but I am biased because I am a huge Bocello fan. I am in the camp of thought that says a comic with good art but a somewhat poor story is worse than one with a good story and somewhat poor art. That's true. Didn't do it for me on the second read-through. Clutch. This is what this month was about. While this album is not new to me, as I'm a big Clutch fan, it was enjoyable to sit down and listen to it with a critical eye. This album is great. My only complaint is that it is definitely produced a little more than previous albums, and it may lose some of the Clutch charm that I discovered when I first heard their self-titled album.
He likes the old stuff.
Over 10 years ago, good pick. So I guess
Clutch charm.
He finishes up by saying, "So I guess I only like Scotty's music choice. Please, Scotty, suggest more music to me and keep away from the Costner movies in the future, Mario."
We're gonna do. I'm picking Waterworld.
Fuck you, Mario.
I'm picking Waterworld.
Yeah, and my next pick's gonna be the Postman.
Oh, we're only picking Costner. Yeah.
This is the Costner Club.
We can do that for like 3 years. There's enough of them.
Fandango is an awesome movie.
And, wait till I pick Tin Cup, motherfucker.
And Bull Durham is my favorite baseball movie.
I like Costner.
God, I can't wait till we all watch Young Frankenstein. Oh.
There's not many Costner movies that I didn't like.
Me too.
Costner. I don't know.
I think he's a
Mr. Pimp. Brooks, we talked about that.
You know what? I'll tell you what. I don't like Postman.
I didn't like Postman. I didn't hate it.
Loved
people,
it.
People went crazy, hated it. I didn't hate it, but I didn't.
Mike doesn't like post-apocalyptic stuff, though, right?
I did.
That's not the reason I don't.
Whatever. Like whatever. Drop it. We're not. This episode's done.
There were.
Yeah,
there
we're
were,
done now.
There were things in Waterworld that I liked.
I like
overall.
Waterworld.
Do you?
I do.
Really?
There were things in it that
you know
I liked.
What? That movie feels like a six-hour epic.
I watched that movie and did not understand why everybody hated it. The same way that Scotty feels about every Kevin Costner movie.
I like Postman better than Waterworld, and I still like Waterworld.
I like Waterworld.
Waterworld would be okay if they cut out about 45 minutes of constant water ski fights.
You know why Waterworld, everybody thinks it's cool to hate Waterworld? Because
it was so expensive and didn't make any money.
The hype against Waterworld was the hype against hating Waterworld was started before the movie even came out.
Because it was so expensive.
It was so expensive.
It was a classic piling on movie.
It still had some cool things in it.
It was awesome.
It was
cut out a lot of the water ski fight.
Halt!
I don't know if I could jump on that bandwagon, but
I watched it one afternoon on TBS with my friends, and with commercials, I swear to God, that movie lasted 4 hours, and at one point, my friend turned to me and goes, we're 2.5 hours, how much longer is this movie? And I'm like, there's a lot to go, man. We still
you
want to
know how much longer it is?
Awesome,
that's how long.
We still have three more water ski fights over gas.
All right, well, that's our first
club
show. So there you go.
AC/DC, not affiliated.
I think
with
that
the
was some that was some good discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, good pick, Scotty. I think it.
So we unveiled the new picks.
Let's just go ahead and end the club. That was a good.
That was
club.
It. We're done with the club.
And it's done.
Well, Scotty got
fuck
his one.
Your movies and books.
He doesn't want to read anybody else's shit.
Are you guys glad to have me back alive?
Yes, it's good to see you.
Glad Yakov Smirnoff didn't keep you in Branson.
I rolled with him for a little while. Good old Yakov.
In Soviet Russia, the fly eats you.
Have you seen him before? Live?
No. Friends of mine and I once discussed going to Branson specifically to see him. And then we realized what a huge
you had a moment of clarity.
Yeah, I had a moment of clarity where we were halfway there, and I said, "What are we doing? Let's turn back around and go home."
Casey and I were about. We were very close to going to the Dixie Stampede, which is Dolly Parton's dinner theater.
Where
you watch, love Dolly.
Hell but here's the thing. We're going to go because it's like a big rodeo show while you eat, which I'm sure the food's fantastic.
Yeah, who doesn't like live horses and food?
Yeah.
Like within
next to my whole chicken.
Yeah.
The country version.
And the only reason we didn't go is because they, and I was slightly pissed about this, they had already started the Christmas version of it. So it's
before Halloween?
Yeah, it was like Jesus and stuff riding on horse and then the three wise men. And stuff.
I wouldn't be surprised if Dolly sneaks some Jesus stuff in all year long.
Yeah.
all year. But to already break out the Yuletide greetings is a bit early.
Yeah, it was a bit early. Casey and I, we were still in Halloween mode. Mm-hmm. I mean, the leaves had barely started to change in Branson. So to go and watch like three wise men while I had a fucking lemonade with a roasted chicken,
bit much.
While with horse shit around was a little too much for me. So
how did you end up in
Branson?
Anyway, we kind of touched on it.
Anything south of the Mason
last week,
any road will lead you to Branson.
But I know people are wondering
out right.
there what happened on this.
Casey's firm built a cabin. In the mountains of Colorado.
The Bare Hands, the whole group.
And that sounds very cool.
Yeah.
And you think that it's going to be at like a resort, or at least near a resort town.
It's 10 by 10 feet.
Yeah. You think you're like, oh, this is going to be like by a resort town, and it's going to be...
We'll step outside onto the ski lift.
You go eat dinner and have stuff to do and do some shopping and do some
maybe
romantic stuff.
Taking a show?
Yeah.
Something.
Make love.
So we...
Come on.
I wish.
It should happen.
So we drive out there. We stop on the way. We cut the drive up and stayed in Nebraska, Lincoln, Nebraska, for a night. That was just to break up the
drive. You didn't stay?
No.
Not in Lincoln. Town, isn't it?
So we got to Colorado. We got to Denver, and I'm just like a little kid, like, oh, look at the mountains in the back. It's so awesome. Beautiful. Casey's like, oh, it is beautiful. And we drive through Denver, and we get to the bottom of the mountains. Outside of Denver, and we're like, oh, it's still so beautiful. Casey's like, I know, it's so beautiful. And then we drive up the road, we get off the main interstate, and now we're on just a regular road. And I'm still like, oh, it's pretty. Before it was beautiful, now it's pretty. And we start driving up the road, all of a sudden the clouds come, And Casey looks up. We're going up the mountain, right? Yeah. We're driving up the side of the mountain. And Casey goes, "Oh, look, honey, look at the mist up there by the top of the mountain."
Those are clouds.
Yeah, and I said, "Honey, that's not mist, sweetie. That's cloud." And her knuckles went white. And all of a sudden...
you can get above the clouds.
The term that you learn in driver's ed, 10 and 2, was so hardcore put into practice by Casey from that point on.
There are still molded hand grips.
Oh, God. Every 5 seconds, she was wiping the sweat off her hands.
She had a bit of the vertigo. when she got that.
So we're driving up the mountain, and we just keep going higher. And all of a sudden, we hit basically a whiteout. Like, it's just snowing. Just fucking snowing like crazy. 65 degrees and sunny in Denver. 30 minutes up the mountain, it's blizzarding.
Red rum.
Yeah.
Red rum.
I'm already thinking, I got an axe, and I'm going to chase it through the maze. I'm already feeling fucked up. So Casey, at this point, is freaking out. We get over this one hump, and we're heading downhill a little bit. And it's the road's so covered in snow, and Casey can't see in front of her that she almost comes to a stop in the middle of the road. Now, there's other cars on this road. And she just looks at me kind of having a slight bit of a panic attack and goes, "What do I do?" And I said, "There's not a lot of options. We have to drive forward because we will get smashed in the back."
Drive, yeah. Woman!
So we find a little place to stop off so she can breathe and relax for a minute. And anyway, we go up the mountain. Finally, through the snow, we're a nervous wreck. We just keep climbing and climbing and climbing. Finally, we climb above the weather. We're above the snow at this point. We top one of these mountains, and
there's something to worse than snow.
Yeah, which is mentally just fucks every type of brain cell you have up. Like, why am I above the weather? That's for planes.
Yeah. And now this place is 11,000
feet. By the time we got to the quote unquote town that our cabin was outside of, by town I mean four buildings, and Alma is the highest town in the U.S. So it's 11,000 feet where the cabin was. Yeah. It was about 3 miles of gravel road up another mountain to get to our cabin.
Yeah,
so we get to the cabin. Right when we get up to the cabin, the road's covered in snow. I have to get out and push the car into the driveway because it's sliding down the hill.
That'll happen.
But why weren't you helping Casey with the driving?
Oh, because I don't have a driver's license. Okay,
just want to throw that one out.
Because I'm sure a helicopter would have swooped down. Yeah.
I don't have a driver's license. Yeah, so...
Excuse me, sir, are you driving?
So Casey and I believe in the law, Caters.
Above all else.
Taxman.
Yes. Compliance.
And if we die, I want to be able to go to hell and blame it on her.
She was driving.
Yeah, bitch. So we get into the cabin, and we bring our suitcase and stuff in, and by the time we get in, I can't breathe. For people that don't know, 11,000 feet is no fucking
joke. That's high up there.
Yeah. People say, "Oh, altitude's crazy," and I'm like, "Yeah, whatever. Whatever. I'll be cool." No, I'm not cool.
It takes you 45 minutes to boil water.
Oh, it's crazy, crazy fucking talk up in there.
It's
I'm
like
in the place.
Planet.
I've never heard anything so goddamn silent. We live in Chicago, right? There's not a moment
you
of
could
your
shoot
life.
A gun 5 feet away from me while I'm sleeping, and
yes.
I'm pretty sure
there's
I would
always
sleep
sound,
all the
way. And there's always light. It's never dark
yes,
here.
Yes, there's always light, there's always sound. We get there, we've got all types of manner of fucking animal tracks that we've never fucking seen. I could have been the goddamn Jabberwocky for all I know.
Skunk
I don't know.
Ape. Could have been a skunk yeah. ape.
So Casey's freaking out about the animal tracks. She's freaking out, if it keeps snowing, we're never going to get the fuck out of here. What are we going to do? There's no goddamn grocery stores. We didn't bring any food. We thought there'd be a grocery store.
You hunt for your food out there.
Yeah.
You didn't bring a bow or a shotgun?
There wasn't a house for smoking your meats. There was a sign on the building that said, closed till April. It's fucking October. So we're like, okay, this is not good news. So we try to fake it that night. Like, we're like, oh, this is cool and romantic. Yeah.
This is cool.
Yeah.
And romantic.
Yeah, so we're trying to watch a movie.
I mean, you said you literally couldn't walk like 10 feet without...
No, you can't sit. I mean, it's not even about exertion. And Mike will tell you, it's not even about physical exertion. That'll fucking kill you. Sitting on the couch watching a movie every 5 minutes. No movement. I laid in bed. Casey finally was so tired she just fell asleep. I laid in bed for 4 hours on and off a fucking oxygen tank trying to get my head straight. My head's pounding from the pressure, and I'm not being able to catch my breath. And I'm like, this sucks.
Happy vacation.
Yeah. Oh, I can't. I'm so glad I'm going to do this for 9 days. I wonder how many peanut butter and jelly sandwich variations I can make.
And a mile away, a Sasquatch is watching the cabin.
Yeah.
Let's go. And yeah. You know, like, you both freak out this year. What was that?
Right.
You look outside and you just see all the eyes.
Yeah. It was just fuck. So we wake up in the morning. Now when we wake up in the morning sun, and right outside of our porch window, and we walk out on the porch, beautiful vista of this giant fucking mountain peak. Now part of you is saying, oh, how beautiful, and the other part of you is saying, why the fuck is there something that big in front of me?
I wish I could crush it.
It was snowing so hard. The wind was blowing so hard you could see the fucking snow gusting off the top of this peak of mountain. Like, what is this? I don't understand this. I need a building, right? Concrete somewhere.
Man, you were living into the wild.
Oh, it's fucked up.
I'm surprised you came back.
We sat there for a little bit, and we're trying to play it off in the morning, and I think about simultaneously both said, we don't like this. This is not fun. Vacation was supposed to be fun for
enjoyable.
Us. Maybe we're just not mountain people, right? Maybe we're city people, and we need to see other people.
Well, you know that about yourselves now.
Yeah.
You learned a lesson.
Branson was an... that's going to be awesome when I get to that.
This is like a whole separate podcast. Yeah,
and I'm going to speed it up. Finally, we go... we said, fuck it, let's get the hell out of here. We just looked at the map on Google and said, oh, we're close to New Mexico. Casey's parents have been to Santa Fe before.
At this point, you have to feel like a billion miles.
7 hours.
You have to feel like a billion miles away from New Mexico.
When you're at 11,000 feet in the air, Florida is very close to you in your mind.
You should see my face. Yeah. Say, oh, we're close to. And then in my mind, I'm like looking at the map and that's it. It's like.
it's 7 hours. Is not
well,
that
this
far.
Is, I mean, he called.
In the
called
western
me.
Half of the United States, everything is near each other because nothing is near anything.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway,
everything is a day drive.
Right. Yeah. We get the fuck out of there and we drive to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and we're just like, oh, this is great. We see people.
Best Buy.
As soon as we got down to Denver,
I hate old people.
Yeah. As soon as we got down to Denver. The first thing we saw was the Best Buy. I just said, pull the fuck over. Pull the fuck over and let's go into this place. I know this place. Wow. And we go to Best Buy. Because we were just like, this is crazy.
Well, you were saying when I talked to you, because I talked to you a couple days after, once you were in New Mexico.
I heard him cracking up in the office. Yeah.
When you
called. Scotty's in New Mexico.
What? Well, he calls me and he's like, I'm like, hey, what's going on? How you doing?
Yeah.
He's like, I'm calling you from a hotel in New Mexico. I'm like, what? How the fuck did that happen?
Reporting in from the road.
I just called somebody.
We're
freaking out. We want to make sure we were still on the planet.
I mean, you were saying that, I mean, it was like.
You should have had you doing remotes from car dealerships.
You were sort of like.
I'm at a new Olympics.
Almost like freaking out because it was so, like, almost alien to you.
Yeah,
guys.
It was like an alien. It was. Now, people who are from there and around there are probably very, very used to it, and they
probably
think that I'm a little...
all of us in battle.
Yeah.
Because of their superhuman ability.
Yeah, their super blood, the red blood cell count. Yeah. For me, in Casey, it was truly... I mean, we've lived in... I've lived in Tennessee for a couple of years. Casey's lived in Illinois her entire life.
Not many people know that Casey actually lives in a like a submerged thing of water.
Right.
She can't live above like sea level.
Right.
Yeah. Not many people know that.
No.
Which is why this trip was risky.
It was risky.
Some people would say
it was
risky.
An adventure.
Yeah, it was an adventure. You experiment sometimes.
Yeah.
Mix things up.
So anyway, we go to New Mexico. Have some great fucking food. I buy a bull skull. Because
that's what
you fucking do when you go to Mexico when you're supposed to stay in Colorado and you get scared like a little bitch and drive to New Mexico.
They give you a coupon for it as you leave the Colorado.
You buy
border,
a bull
like,
skull. So,
hey, thanks, Lowlander. Here you go. Pick up a skull.
Go find an iguana.
The drive was beautiful there. We got the bull skull. Then we were like, where else the fuck can we go? We're not going to stay here for all these days. So we're like, let's just turn this into a crazy around the road trip, but try to swing us back up somewhere close to Illinois. And so we're just trying to throw things around. Casey wanted to go to Gatlinburg because I've lived in Tennessee and Gatlinburg's the shit.
It's pretty close.
And Casey said and I said Gatlinburg's a little too far, and Casey goes, Branson's like a low rent version of Gatlinburg.
It's for old crackers.
Yes. So we decided.
Andy Williams.
People, for people who don't know either.
White person vacation.
For people who don't know Branson or Gatlinburg, yeah. they are riddled with go-karts, putt-putt, gaudy-ass museums, crazy breakfast buffets.
In comic book terms, there's probably like a stasis field over that entire city that doesn't allow you to ever travel faster than 30 miles per yeah. hour, no matter what could right. possibly, no matter what crazy situation comes right. up. You'll now, never get above
did,
that
Did
speed.
Branson used to be Silver Dollar City?
Well, Silver no, Dollar Silver Dollar City is the Silver. Theme park there.
Okay, so it's
so we there. Went to Branson.
But Silver Dollar City was kind of the main attraction, and then Branson has kind yes. of exploded into
and there's a huge strip now. If yeah. people haven't been to Branson for a while, it's blown the fuck up.
It's the country version of Las Vegas yeah. without casinos.
Yeah, it's very country-driven. Yeah. So we drive there because Casey went there as a child and remembered it, and we thought, hey, you know what? We went to the scary Colorado. We bought a fucking bull skull. Now let's go to the cheesy fucking Ozark Mountains, right? Well, we could deal with those mountains.
You need the embrace of Andy Williams at that point. Bring you in and be like, listen, not every part of the country so
Now, you
high.
Grew up around mountains, but not the same kind of mountain.
Yeah. Those are like big hills.
Those are foothills.
The Smoky Mountains are big hills.
They're foothills.
With bears in them. So we get there. We go
and,
to...
And stills.
And what?
And stills.
Whiskey stills.
Oh. And Nash.
Mash.
So we get there. We go to some cheesy-ass wax museum that kicked all types of ass. We went to some...
Is there a
completely
Believe It or Not museum?
Yeah, there is.
Oh!
We went to a completely...
Wisconsin Dells.
Nice.
We went to a completely fake Titanic museum that all their exhibits would have a card in front of it. It was pretty cool shit, but all the card would... The card would say... Something similar to this was on the boat.
Very.
I'm thinking.
That seems like a real
lot of pictures of Leonardo DiCaprio.
Well, they had a the outside
like a real crapshoot.
The actual building was built like a scale version of the Titanic. The front part of it in water.
I love places like in Wisconsin Dells. There's an upside down building called Top Secret that doesn't tell you what it is, except that it's just upside down.
This is upside down. So then we went to Silver Dollar City because that's all Casey wanted to do. And that's basically a theme park that's set in like the 1800s. So it's like the Wild Wild West. So it's like blacksmiths hammering shit and people making baskets and you can pet goats and shit.
And roller coasters.
And I don't do that shit. I'm scared of roller coasters, brother. I don't do that.
It's too high.
And why
I don't play.
I don't can't breathe at the top
can't
of
it.
Yeah. I had my height at fucking height. I just want to go back to Illinois and I want to see empty cornfields and
flat land.
So that's how we ended up in Branson. It kind of swung us back up. Then we drove up through St. Louis and back home. So,
but you enjoyed yourself.
Oh, it was a blast. We got to drive through. You know, the drive through New Mexico is beautiful. Oklahoma's kind of cool. Texas, not so much. We drove through there and then
West Texas. Is
and honestly, flat. Branson is beautiful. It is very very pretty there because it is on top of. I don't like to call it a mountain now after what I drove through. And for the people who live in Colorado up in the mountains, you're fucking retarded. Why do you live up there?
They have dial-up. They're going to listen to this in like 15 years.
They still have cameras with birds in it. They chipping away at stone.
And they always look at you and go, this job sucks.
Yeah.
Click, 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 click.
Yeah.
Like the
That's crazy.
Sucks.
So, yeah. anyways.
But Central Missouri, serious, it's billboard, trailer park. Billboard.
Firework stand,
trailer park.
Lion's Den, adult bookstore. Yeah, baby.
That's the freedom we're fighting for, guys.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
The beautiful Americana.
In Soviet Russia, the mountains can't breathe when they're on top of you.
What?
Yakov Smirnoff.
Oh, Jesus.
Was he in Heroes this last week? Was that Yakov Smirnoff in Heroes? I just think every Russian
If he was, is. That show has really gone downhill.
Yeah. Think of his career once the Soviet Union fell. Like, who cares?
It's not funny.
You know? What does he do?
Did you ever watch the Ben Stiller show when it was on way back when?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He did a whole skit on Yakov Smirnoff post the fall of the Iron Curtain.
Poor Yakov.
He lost a lot.
Poor guy.
Well, we're glad you're back, Scotty.
I'm back. Casey's not back. I did kill her after Ozarks.
She's you killed her 20 minutes outside Chicago.
Yeah. She's hanging next to the bull skull.
Yeah.
Shit, we're in Bolingbrook. Let me get the axe.
I dumped her body in the back of the new IKEA.
Oh, we've made it all the way to the oil refinery. I gotta kill this bitch.
We call that the Exxon oil refinery. We call that Gotham City because at nighttime it looks like Gotham City.
You know, that's whenever we would drive into Chicago because you know I grew up really actually pretty close to Casey, and whenever you would drive to Chicago,
did you guys hang out?
You'd see the
fucking gypsies.
we'd sell four spar.
Yeah.
So,
body soap.
But we drive up here. Yeah, you'd see the oil refineries, and you always felt like that was like whenever you got to Chicago.
Yeah.
And it's like an hour outside of Chicago.
It's not at all.
You're not anywhere close.
At this point now, when you see that, you go, oh, I'm leaving. I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out. Yeah.
Now you think I'm going to be stuck in traffic for an hour.
The border. All right, so that's my fucking
trip.
That's
the story.
Yeah.
All right. Fuck mountains.
No more vacations.
Fuck mountains.
Next year, Hawaii?
No. So that's cool.
Now that we've been
And now I hate the fucking ocean, too.
Boy, you are lost, Nate.
Well, hell, I guess this river comes out somewhere, don't it? That's where we're going. Somewhere. Look, we don't want any trouble here. You know something? You're right. We're lost. I don't know where in hell we are.
What to do with it?
We got a little pretty male thing.
That's the truth.
You're going to do some praying for me, boy. And you better pray good.
Come on, squeal! Squeal!
Tell them what the next club is.
Next selections, and I'm actually really excited to unveil mine because I think
talking
it's
talking the mic.
It is, how'd you get next?
I called dibs.
Oh. He called dibs. Remember, he's all like, "I got dibs."
You want after Chris, or do I want after Chris?
Dibs.
Actually, I think he defaulted to you today, but you
yeah, you can have it after. I still haven't made up my mind.
I'm
on
only
my
picking
stuff.
Holiday themed.
No, I think that I picked three things that all are different facets of my personality.
You have three facets.
I have at least three, maybe four.
Did they make an album about Swiffer Jet? Swiffer Jet.
Swiffer Jet.
The little sweeper, because he's like, clutch, maybe want to clean my house.
I can't use Swiffer Jets because they're not good for your animals.
What?
Oh, Jesus.
I use them all the time. My animals don't care.
I shoot it into my dog's face.
I clean my dog with them.
I'm going to swiff your ass, dog.
Okay, my music selection is, because I'm kind of an old redneck at heart, this is the Drive-By Truckers two-disc concept
two
album.
Discs? Two discs? Oh, what the fuck?
Do I have a month to listen?
You always got a goddamn... pull out some weird shit and get a little extra, don't
this
you?
This is concept album. It is a Southern rock concept album, and it is called the Southern Rock Opera, and it is by the Drive-By Truckers.
Anytime the word opera is in, like, I remember the hip hopera on MTV.
Hip-hopera.
Carmen?
Yep.
Well, can you hear me?
This really is it's a Southern rock opera. It's a concept album about growing up in...
don't tell us.
In,
tell us.
In the southern
don't
part
tell us how we're supposed to feel.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I don't want to know.
All right. Okay.
Tell us the name. We'll listen to it.
Okay. It's my copy.
Drive-By Truckers.
What's the movie?
The movie is, and Scotty's going to love this because it's subtitled. I'm picking The Devil's Backbone.
Or Esperanza del Diablo.
I have that on my Netflix already. Yeah, that's what it's like.
It is a brief description. It is a... kind of a period piece. It takes place in 1939 during the Civil War in
Spain.
It's also a ghost story.
Awesome.
That takes place in an orphanage.
Dope.
With an undetonated bomb and comic books.
I think the Spanish Civil War is like the new hotness with movies. So.
This is
Guillermo.
Guillermo del Toro, right?
He loves it.
Yeah,
keep making them.
Pan's Labyrinth, Hellboy.
sort of the unofficial prequel to Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, I mean, he talks about it a lot as kind of the precursor to Pan's Labyrinth.
I love the Spanish Civil War because it was one of the few examples of when, like, people willingly went to go fight fascism when even their country. Well, I'm just that's for my history podcast.
That's exciting, Tom. Oh. What's your
that's my history
what's your,
podcast called?
What's the
Dust and Thoughts?
And my trade paperback selection
to look it up.
Is I've got it here on screen. It is Point Blank by
Ed Brubaker.
It is by Ed Brubaker and Colin Wilson. It is Point Blank is the 5-issue prologue to
Sleeper.
Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips' Wildstorm series, Sleeper. It takes some classic Wildstorm characters like Grifter and a few others and drops them into a espionage conspiracy.
Let's mix it up, fuckers.
It is
saying,
good stuff.
So there's the
point
choices.
Blank.
And that's for November, and we'll be talking about those at the end of November or the first week of December. Then,
ring,
right?
Ding, 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 ding.
Fantastic.
I love Christmas!
I'm only picking Christmas comic book. Last Christmas trade paperback.
It's the only one we
Christmas
know of.
Christmas Vacation. And,
Christmas Vacation.
Oh, and Rat Pack Phil Christmas. Spector's Phil Christmas album.
Oh, God.
Phil Spector had a Christmas album?
Yeah, he did.
Was that
I've
before?
Got a James Brown Christmas. I'll let you borrow it.
Santa, get up on this!
Under my nice. Funky Christmas tree.
Now would probably be a good time to also
mention our sponsor.
InStock Trades is offering this month's, November's reading selection, Point Blank, to Around Comics listeners for an amazing 35% off the cover price. Get your copy today for only $9.72.
Oh, yeah.
You can now read Ed Brubaker's amazing 5-issue prologue to the critically acclaimed Sleeper for less than $10. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. And remember that all orders over $50 ship all free.
Free?
So
free.
Join, grab that and join us. And, I didn't really... Mario had sent us an email, and I'm glad he did, but we never really requested anyone else's thoughts.
No, we said, actually we did, we said if you'd like to, that's why we now and said if you'd like to come on and we may read it.
If you want to, on the forum or
have a thread about this.
Or email us at the end of the month, we may pick some and read them also. Yeah. So, because I thought
go
that was
to the forum.
That was pretty cool of Mario, kind of.
Oh, he was just having fun with
whatever.
His, not everybody's going to like what you like.
Hey, whatever,
man.
Beauty and the Geek.
Oh, man, everyone's going to love Young Frankenstein when I pick that.
I love Young Frankenstein.
You know what? You can also go online and digitally lick Chris's taint.
I think you used that one already.
Did I?
Yeah, I think that's a reason.
Fuck!
You can do
come
is
on.
You can go online.
You guys memorize everything I say?
You can
no,
go online
I do.
And you can
lick
grab
and taint
Chris's,
sticks in my mind.
Chris is out in the internet cold, and you can bring him inside and hold him, and then fuck him.
Fuck him in the eyeball.
Fuck him warm.
You know how you do that?
I'm feeling violent.
Scotty,
here.
How do you fuck him in the eyeball?
By leaving an iTunes review. So thank you for fucking Chris in the eyeball, G. Fanrick. And thank you for fucking Chris's other eyeball, T.R. McGillicuddy.
And J.T. Ford and Dan Walsh watched.
Ooh, they fucked each other's eyeball and sent pictures to Chris.
And they looked at Chris's eyeball while he was getting fucked.
Wow.
Good time.
Good Lord. It was Halloween. That was a horror. I just got done with Halloween. That was like a horror item.
I feel violated more and more
you should.
Each episode when you come up
you
with new ways.
You know what
would
make you feel better? By supporting the Hero Initiative.
Oh.
They do not fuck people in the eyeball.
No, they don't. Oh. But if Steve Ditko were to get fucked in the eye, they would help him out. So we are proud to help support the Hero Initiative.
Class eye.
Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people we have given us.
Pull up our site.
Oh, so much enjoyment. For more information, visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809 and ask for Charlie.
Remix!
And you can also join our friends of the program. Go to our website where you can download and print out our LCS Challenge flyer. Ask your comic shop manager or owner if they will display it in their store. If they do, send us an email. We'll mention you and the store on the show as well as post it on our site. Become the friend of the program today. And I'd like to mention the Zone Comics at 18063 Dixie High. Highway.
The Zone.
Homewood, Illinois, 60430. That was
in... Get Zone! zoned.
The zone.
I zoned you.
That was sent in by Rick, a.k.a. Ripper 6, on the forum.
Ripper 6 in the zone.
Ripper owns you. He zones your ass.
So go to our website and become a friend of the program, just like Ripper 6.
Ripper 6, put fuck Chris in the eyeball in the zone.
Jesus.
I got Christ. Zoned.
I'm going to need a new prescription for my glasses after that.
I think we're zoned.
Matt, did the soundtrack for the Bottle Boy movie. Oh, are we recording?
I'd like to thank Mark Beatty at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles
and
for hosting us, as always. Mr. Mike Norton for dropping by and making his presence known. Thank
bringing
you,
me a pie.
Norton.
Mike brought me a lemon pie today.
Lemon showed pie. We'll call him Mike Nordzone.
I love
showed
you,
up,
Mike.
Showed up in his Adam shirt.
I stepped knee-deep into pie zone. All of a sudden, I'm eating pie, and I'm smiling like a goddamn idiot. I'm having a great time. Eating pie, drinking beer, talking about movies and comics. I just want to hug the shit out of everyone.
Jesus.
Let's end this now.
What the? One drink with Franco Harris, and you fucking Mr.
He's
Happy.
He's strong. He's got a mighty
Caters
beard.
Is going Tabor on us. Let's end this.
For Tom,
Franco Harris dies
pie
beard.
For Tom. For Scotty Young,
and
for Brian Salazar, I'm Christopher Niesman. Have a great rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again on Monday with the Around Comics comic book, what do we
Jesus
call it?
Christ.
With Around Comics.
Audio magazine.
Comic
Show
Culture Podcast.
Derailing as we speak.
Oh, I can't
Holy
derail.
Shit. We didn't even really drink much. Goddamn, what the hell happened?
We're
did.
High on
oh,
pie.
Oh, yeah, you were hammered at Gibson.
Hammered zone!
We're high on pie. All right, everyone, have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday.
In the meantime. Meantime.
We'll be everywhere
in
and around comics.
Bye.
Oh, that's nice.
Goodbye.
Boo.
This is my voice.
Would like to suggest a topic? Send us your comments or are interested in becoming a panel member? Email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same. Bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Love your baby. Yeah.